This is the Bloom Pod, and I'm Taylor Onion.
And I'm Melissa Lutz.
Each week, we bring you an interview with an everyday person who is doing their damnedest to chase big ideas and turn them into a reality. I interview the guests for the first part of the show, and then Melissa and I get together and recap the main points at the end.
With the occasional shenanigan.
Please enjoy this week's guest, John Schertzer. We do want to share a note before we get into the guest that this interview was recorded in December of 2020, prior to the events of January 6th, 2021. Melissa and I will share some ideas, thoughts and ideas in the recap, but please be aware as you're listening to the interview that it was recorded before the events of January 6th. Please enjoy this week's guest. Well, John, I am very excited to have you on. You are actually, we're only a few episodes into season two here, and you are the second guest who's been a recommendation of a previous guest. So yeah. Thrilled to continue that trend and to have you on today with us. So I should mention the guest that recommended you is the first of season two is Karen Nishimura Smith, and she, like you, is also at the Society of Professional Journalists.
Correct.
You both serve in different capacities, but would love to, you know, start off by having you tell us a little bit about you and a little bit about your background.
Yeah, sure. So thank you, Taylor, for having me on. I really appreciate it. And Karen is fantastic for recommending me. I definitely think you got a excellent conversation with her, I'm sure. She's a fantastic individual. I've known her since I was an undergraduate college student. She came to our campus to do some consulting for our fraternity and sorority community. I was the chapter president for my fraternity, Theta Chi, and I had an individual meeting with her. I think she was doing some assessment or something like that around how the Greek community could improve. And it was a fantastic meeting, and I remembered it very clearly. And then as I got professionally involved in fraternity and sorority life, our connection only grew from there. And then when I had a position open at SPJ, the Society of Professional Journalists, to lead our education efforts, I was pleased that she reached out and said she'd be interested. And so it's sort of fun how it all comes back around, and now we're colleagues in this work. But you know, my career has been largely focused in the not-for-profit sector, doing work for a variety of associations and organizations, trying to help organizations meet their mission. And I think that's, to me, what is probably the connecting point amongst all of those different experiences, is that they're all very mission-driven organizations. And I find that when I get into an organization, my first objective is to try to understand and truly comprehend what the mission is we're trying to achieve, and then figure out what outcomes will help get us to that point. So I started in higher education, worked on a couple of college and university campuses doing leadership education for college students and a variety of other things. And then I found sort of a new calling in association work, in that I took on the leadership initiatives for the North American Interfraternity Conference. And did that for a few years. And that showed me that I could work in higher education and with college students, but I didn't have to be on a campus. I could do that in other ways. So that was exciting and fun. And then I also worked for an organization called Kiwanis International, which is a worldwide service organization. They also have a college program called Circle K. So I got to advise that program, as well as their high school program, Key Club International. So, and that was a fun experience in working with a younger set of students, and sort of understanding how to do leadership development for high schoolers, which was really different for me, but a lot of fun. And then eventually, after a couple of stops, I ended up here at Society of Professional Journalists. So, you know, it's been a very, it's a lot of different elements to the things I've done, but it's all, I guess, the connecting point is mission.
Very nice. I wanted to ask several questions based on your intro alone, yeah. But one of them is what would, and you kind of touched on this, that there's a difference between leadership development with high school students versus with college students. What would you say are kind of some of those key differences?
Yeah, I think so. Both sets are very eager to learn, which is makes them a fun audience to work with. So, you know, especially in leadership development, it's something usually that's sought out by a student, right? It's not something they're forced to do. So because they're seeking it out, they're really interested in learning. So that makes them really fun to work with in that they're eager to learn. I found that with both audiences, though, my trick, it's not a trick, really, I guess it's a tactic or a method is to prepare to educate them as if they are adults. So I start with designing the curriculum and the programs to meet them at an adult level. And then I usually adapt on the fly if I feel it needs to be scaled back or scaled differently for understanding. What I found is that some leadership programs or some experiences for high school or college students start at the other way, you know, so it sort of starts at a lower level and then tries to amp it up. I tend to think that students are ready to meet me where I'm at if I put it at a high level, and they will rise to the occasion, and I've never been let down that they do. So other than that, the differences are really kind of small. It's that, you know, college students, that experience of going to college and sort of branching out on your own gives you a little bit more of a critical mindset and a independent streak. So, you know, you have to work extra hard to get buy-in from that group. High school students, because they're around adult teachers and educators all the time, tend to give you the benefit of the doubt that you kind of know what you're doing. College students might start with some skepticism. So that would be probably the biggest difference.
That makes sense. I can attest to or vouch for the fact that college students are a little bit skeptical for sure.
Yeah, which is healthy. I mean, I think that's what makes them also fun to work with. They kind of see through BS really quickly. So you got to bring your varsity game if you're working with a group of college students, or else they won't handle it, or they won't put up with it, won't
buy in at all, for sure.
Right.
For sure. So, and another thing that you mentioned, more specific to kind of the work that you were doing or the mission that you were doing, you mentioned that you like to kind of dig in as soon as you first get there and really figure out what the mission is mm-hmm. before you start to kind of, you know, either make any changes or kind of move on from there. So I'm curious to know, is there a process that you follow to do that? And kind of what does it look like for you to get to know the mission of essentially an unfamiliar organization? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think the, you know, with the exception probably of the North American Interfraternity Council, because I was a fraternity member and kind of knew them, every other experience I've been in, I've not been a member of that group before I took on the staff role that I was in. So I was not an SPJ member before joining staff here. I was not a Kiwanis member before joining their team. And, you know, one of the things, I use that as a strength in that to start those experiences, I kind of did, I treat it as I was exploring. You know, I was asking a lot of questions. And I think questions are what really drives change. So if you become really good at being able to frame a question and be able to ask a question that is compelling and unique and different in a way to look at things, you will find a whole lot of interesting information that you wouldn't otherwise discover. What I have learned over time is that a lot of organizations, especially older institutional organizations like the ones I happen to be a part of, drift a little bit away from their mission, sometimes a lot, because circumstances in the environment around them change and they try to seek how to respond to that. And sometimes that means they go outside of what they were, their original purpose or their original reason for being. So a very healthy thing that I've found I've brought to every organization I've been a part of is bringing us back to what is our purpose. So tell me how that, for instance, this thing there, this new program, this new initiative, how does that fit to what we originally were designed to do? And what our true mission is. So that's usually a good question that gets results. Another good question is, how will we know we've achieved our mission? What will it look like? What will it feel like? How will we be able to what's the headline if we were able to do that? And that helps people understand the metrics behind how you're trying to go about the work you're doing and what, you know, what really realizing your mission looks like. It's something that can oftentimes be obtuse and very broad and makes it more tangible. So those are some tactics I use usually from the get-go, but I'd say the main thing is questions, asking a lot of questions, being a curious learner right from the get-go is it, and people appreciate that, I think. I would advise folks who are getting into positions of leadership in organizations to not go in any organization wanting to just flip things over and sort of make your mark and to be, you know, that sole solitary, you know, dynamic leader. Walk into those organizations as a curious learner, and you will find that people really appreciate that and buy into what you're trying to do. And then you slowly start to incorporate the things you feel are really important.
I think curiosity is such an underrated characteristic of leadership, because so often, and you just nailed it on the head, that people will come in and I'm going to save this place, and they're going to remember the name of the organization. And then the mm-hmm. next thing they'll say is my name. And so, you know, what they miss within that is the process of, you know, figuring out what that mission is and buying into it. And so being able to ask those questions in a way that not only helps people to understand what it is that you're trying to do in relating them back to the mission, but also mm-hmm. gets them invested, like reinvested in the process, right? I think that's
a
fantastic way to put it.
Well, and I would also add, Taylor, that I think part of it is I love organizations. That's sort of what my passion is, right? I love how humans interact with each other and how we build structures to help our interaction and how we come together to achieve things that we couldn't achieve individually. So part of that love is what makes me curious, right? I'm curious to know how things work. And I never think one way is the right way to do it, right? There's different, every organization I've been a part of may handle a challenge a slightly different way, but it really works for them. And that makes me better able to grasp it. So it's sort of like if you were a space explorer, it's not about just getting there, right? And being able to say, I got there. It's when you get there, you're curious about the reason you are is because you want to get out there and see what it's all about. Mm-hmm. You want to ask questions, you want to observe, and so that's how I view it. And it's what makes it fun for me.
That's a great way to put it. I, speaking of curiosity, I'm curious to know at what point you decided, and I'm sure there's some relations here that you'll be able to explain, but at what point in making the move from this kind of organizational or leadership development groups and from working with high school students or with kids younger than that through Kiwanis or working with, you know, college students through the fraternity and sorority stuff, at what point do you decide, okay, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to make a jump to the Society of Professional Journalists. And I mean, what was the thought process there, or how did that kind of come up?
Yeah. So that was more a line of, so I would always, I still value working with younger individuals, emerging leaders, high school students, college students. And even though I'm not doing that professionally right at this moment, I'm keeping toes in the water to continue to work with them in other ways. So, you know, I think it's a very fun group to work with. But, you know, there comes a point where, you know, a little variety and a little different, you know, kind of focus and approach is something that, you know, I was craving, I guess. One thing that I've noticed about my career is I do get itchy, you know, I do want to go try something new after a period of time. And so it's one of those things where it probably was more related to that. It was just like, that's okay. It's time for a new experience. Now, I wasn't seeking to work with more adults, I guess you could say, and apologies to all the college students I worked with, because you definitely are adults as well. But you know what I mean? The differentiation between those in, you know, professionally established and working professionals versus those in a educational environment. I wasn't actively necessarily looking for that. And in fact, SPJ appealed to me because we do have a strong college presence. So we have 100 college chapters and hundreds of college students in our program. So it kind of gave me that ability to work with that group, as well as, you know, some of the working professional journalists that are in there as well. I'm a news junkie. I watch news. I read newspapers. I listen to radio news. So to now work with those individuals I've been listening to and reading and seeing was exciting to me.
That's super cool. In my research prepping for this interview, I actually found the press release about your hiring. And you are quoted as saying, I'm going to read one of your quotes back to you. You're quoted as saying in there, so the mission of SPJ is to perpetuate a free press, and that has never been more important. And that was back in the fall, I think, of 2019. And you know, what has the mission to perpetuate a free press, what has that meant in 2020 as we have gone through a global pandemic, as we have faced social injustices, as we have been through an election cycle? What does that mean in this year and moving forward, really?
Right. That's a great question. And I think, you know, for this past year, it's been certainly turbulent when it comes to free press issues and the ability for journalists to really achieve what we want them to do for us, which is investigate the truth and uncover facts and report them back to us. I do think journalism is something that people don't appreciate unless it's gone, or free press especially. So I think we've somewhat taken it for granted in the United States of America. And I think if you look to other countries that don't have as robust of a history of a free press as us, just examine that and you would see, okay, we like that what we have here and we need to appreciate it a little bit more. So I do think that in 2020 we saw journalists be attacked for covering, physically attacked for covering protests and things like that by both law enforcement and protesters. So it's sort of just like in the middle of all that. We saw them attacked verbally from powerful places like the White House and, you know, other congressional leaders and things like that. We see it, you know, sort of treated disparagingly in a lot of different corners. And I don't think journalists have a problem with that. I think we know that criticism comes with the trade, but when it starts to feel like, you know, well, we need to shut down what journalists are doing or what news organizations are doing, and that's when it starts to get a little bit frightening, because that's censoring and really standing in the way of that fact finding and that truth seeking we really want journalists to do. So a lot's happened in 2020. I can't tell you what 2021 may be like, because it's we've got a new political administration. But it's a political administration. So Biden, when he was vice president for Obama in the Obama administration, was not a very friendly administration to the press either. So, you know, it's a different sort of unfriendliness. It was more or less it felt like they were just trying to avoid the press, whereas, you know, Trump administration was just a blatant, you know, attacking the press. So it's going to be interesting to see from that angle. But I want individuals to step back and really recognize what the importance is of the news they read, the facts they uncover, and things that they journalism provides to our society.
I think something you just said, and I want to ask first before I get into my next point, do you think there has been an administration at any point that has been friendly to the press, or has there always been mm-hmm. We're not going to talk to them because we don't want to get asked certain questions, or yes, we're going to talk to them, but we're going to call them, mm-hmm. Fake news at every point mm-hmm. of the way.
The answer is that probably not. There probably has not been, but that's the healthy tension that exists, right? So right. Journalists would also tell you they don't want to be friends, friendly one way or the other. And what the difference is, I think, is that in recent years, and it may be a decades long, but it's still more recent if you look at the grand scheme of things, is a much more attention paid to lack of access to individuals when it comes to investigative reporting or getting answers to questions. So the one thing about the Trump administration that was actually really good was that Trump put himself out there a lot. Right. So love it or not. I mean, he was out there a lot. And, a lot of administrations will send out someone else on their behalf, or will use a public information officer to sort of be, you talk to that person versus talking to the principal or the original person. So that's something that's growing more and more problematic, in that journalists are finding a lot of stonewalling to getting to the actual sources of the information. So there probably have been administrations in the past that were much better about that than what we've seen in the last several decades.
Do you find that only happens in the political arena, or is that obviously in something like sports, you're going to, there's a key player that you want to talk to after the game, but I have to imagine mm-hmm. maybe from an administrative standpoint on the sports side, there's some of that happening as well. Do you find that to be the case?
Yeah, definitely. It's, in the corporate sector, right? So if you need to find answers to why, a corporation is doing one thing or another, they'll send you to a public relations officer or something like that. Their job is to try to put out a effective message, right? To kind of control the message, to spin the message towards the favor of whatever entity is they're representing, whether that's a sports team or a corporate entity, or anyway, a hospital, you know, hospitals have big PR outfits as well. So that's where there needs to be sort of a balance that we need to find again, where, you know, obviously those folks have a job to do, but journalists also have a job to do, and that is to get to the unfiltered facts. And so it's just getting harder these days to do that.
Right. I think we hear, or something that I've heard a lot, I should say, is that there's three sides to every story, right? It's for the person A's side, person B's side, and then there's the truth of what actually happened. And I'm curious to know, from a journalism standpoint, what do you think is kind of the key, maybe characteristic, or just key to success when it comes to the relationship between the journalist and whoever they're speaking to? Because I think there's a little bit of, I'm sure, skepticism, a healthy skepticism, mm-hmm. probably on both sides, where the journalist might be considering, okay, I'm going to ask this question and they are probably going to lie to me. Whereas the person who's being interviewed might also think, like, why did they just ask me that question? They know what the, you know, either they know right. what the answer is, or they're trying to prompt me to say something else, or what, or catch me, you know, in a moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think from my viewpoint, I think it's like anything in life. So if you do what you say you're going to do and you act with credibility, then you will earn the respect that you need to be successful. All right. So if a journalist promises one thing and delivers on that, then that's going to build credibility with that particular source. And that source will likely, you know, agree to do more, you know, as it goes down the road. If it doesn't happen, then obviously that hurts that credibility. I also think that we are at a place where maybe we need to take a look at, especially interviews like you see on television and things like that. Journalists will often, it seems like a tactic that's growing, is to get the person in the other chair on the defensive and to ask questions that are intended to do that. It's like things like, many people say that blank, blank, blank. Okay. So that immediately is crafting it to say that, you know, you are obviously in opposition to many people, or, you know, wouldn't it be fair to say da, da, da. So I think we need to be careful of that, because that's not necessarily getting us closer to the truth. That's only causing anyone who gets defensive and gets further away from revealing their true, you know, their true motivations and their true feelings. So that's all. I think those working in the profession these days would have a much better answer than that, but those are observations I have.
I'm smiling right now because we used to call that forming a committee when we were in college. We had a rule on our team that was like, hey, if I've got a person with, or I've got a problem with a teammate, I can't mm-hmm. go to them and say, hey, me and Jane were feeling this way about how you showed up in practice mm-hmm. today. Like, we're not going to form a committee. If I have a problem, yeah. and I'm, you know, I'm going straight to you and kind of
exactly
source.
It's amazing in life that, you know, a lot of things, you know, transcend various, you know, so how I lead my staff team here, I don't want to put anyone on the defensive if I'm communicating to them about an issue or something that we have to say. So if you want to get to the bottom of things and you want to have true empathy and understanding and be able to truly figure out what's going on there, then you have to come in there with a very open-minded approach. And I think the best journalists, those who interview you really want to watch and those whose stuff you really want to read, do have not only that natural curiosity we talked about earlier, but are open. Like they don't go in with all right, here's my game plan. They go in instead with, I'm really wanting to know this, and I want the people watching this to know this. So let's get to that place, and are much more open in how they go about it.
I think that's probably what sets them apart from everybody else, mm-hmm. because I mean, even I'm a doctoral student right now, and each time that I go to write a paper, I'm going into it with the mindset of, this is what I'm planning to find. And then if I don't find that, I'm like, well, wait a minute, why did I not find, you know, the research or the literature to back up what mm-hmm. my thought was initially? So that's a great point.
Yeah. And it's, be excited about that, right?
Right.
Oh, look at this.
Right. Exactly.
Totally unexpected.
Exactly. Yeah. The true excitement is definitely important there. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to shift gears a little bit, and I'm going to take us to the namesake of the podcast here and ask you, what is one experience, or maybe a series of experiences, that you have had in your life that you feel like have helped you bloom into the person that you are today?
Sure. I think, so one, what I have found when I look back at life and the things that were really transformational for me. It usually involves relationships with other people. So there was some relationship that was forged. So for instance, I went through the Leadershape program when I was a college student, and your listeners can look that up. It's a really strong 6-day leadership program that is intense. So you are in this program, you're living offsite in a retreat center and engaging with the fellow learners in the classroom, but outside the classroom. And it's all meant to sort of change your perspective on what you want to do in your life. So it's already set up to make you have extraordinary thoughts around what you want to do in your life. But when I think back on that experience, not only did the curriculum get me to a new place and it was helped me bloom, the facilitator I had at the time, who was also happened to be the dean of students at the university I attended, but I just really didn't know him until this experience, a man named Dr. Richard Nault, was the one who really triggered that in me. And I don't think if he had been there, the experience itself would have done that as much as him being there and showing me that support as I was going through that experience. And so I think that was truly a memorable experience, Leadershape and Dr. Nault being there in my life. I think for me, having children was a blooming experience in that, I think it totally changed my perspective on a variety of things. It made me more humble. It made me less sure I know what the heck's going on in this world, right? So just when you think you got it figured out, they'll throw you a curveball like you've never had. And so I think it's given me some humility that I needed at that point in my life, where I was feeling pretty good about myself and where I felt like I knew all the answers. There's not much that prepares you for that experience. So that's truly something. And then, I'm kind of jumping around. I'd say going all the way back to college, choosing to join a fraternity did that for me as well. And it's been a big part of my life. It gave me an environment in which I could experiment with leadership and working with a group of people I cared about. And it was values-based, so it was a lot about getting back to thinking about what kind of person you want to be. And that was very, very influential for me as well.
Very nice. It's been so interesting to hear everybody's different answers as I've asked that question repeatedly to each guest. And I think what I'm finding is, the art of self-reflection and the ability to look back on either one instance or this kind of chain of events and reflect and think like, oh yeah, maybe, it was this one person who was at the event and then that kind of shaped the different ways that I've operated from here on out, or whether it was kids or whatever it might be. So that's awesome.
Yeah. I think relationships are everything. Now I would balance that with saying that right out of my undergraduate years in college, before I went to do my master's degree, I did do a year where I traveled for the North American Interfraternity Conference doing consulting for interfraternity councils. And it put me on the road driving in a car all over the West Coast and the East Coast, stopping at various campuses to work with these individuals. But that time in the car, that time to just be with yourself and to have thoughts and to stew on those thoughts I think that's valuable as well. So you got to have a balance, right? So you need to be in relationship with others, but don't sacrifice the time to just be with yourself and your own thoughts to let that, process through.
Yeah. And I think so many people have had the opportunity to get, if not all the way there, at least a little bit more of that in the last 10 months of this pandemic that we've gone through.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I guess, what could be a silver lining in this, if you were treated that way. Right. It was just in a very important part of my life when I was a younger person that, I needed that self-reflection time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So I have, one more official question for you, and then we'll move into what we are calling either the quick peel round, which is like a lightning round. My sidekick has been wanting to call it the slap chop round because she's imagining like slap chopping an onion.
Gotcha. Okay.
I'll go with you. But before we get into that, last official question is, what is the best piece of advice that you've ever received?
That's a really good question. The best piece of advice. I think one that just stood out in my mind is I'd have to write them all down and rank them, but this one definitely is memorable to me is, and it could come across as a little bit superficial, but it's not how I heard it nor how I interpreted it is, if you're not having fun doing something, then what's the point? And I think that I've had to remind myself of that several times, and that, you know, fun is relative. It's all what you decide. And I find that, you know, I'm not chasing fun necessarily. I'm chasing fulfillment. But if I'm being fulfilled, I find it's a very fun experience. So in a way they're connected. But I found myself sitting in experiences where I'm like, you know what, I'm not offering much here. I'm not getting much here. And the fun is gone. And you know what, I'm wishing these folks well, and I'm going to move on and let, you know, and I think it's being discerning like that I've needed that advice, because I'm willing to say yes to anything, but it's times where you have to really, you know, call through the stuff you're doing and say, okay, this is just not giving it to me what I want, nor am I giving it to it. So time to go on.
Right.
So I'll say that
one, yeah, for today. That idea of being able to trim the fat is what mm-hmm. I like to call it. And the higher level of investment you got, of course, the more fun it's going to be. So that is a great piece of advice. All right. This is, I'm going to call it the quick peel today, because that's mm-hmm. what I'm feeling like.
Yes, go for it.
So I've got a series here. This is going to be four kind of this or that questions, and then we'll end with a fill in the blank. So the first mm-hmm. this or that is, what is your favorite food?
My favorite food is, I will say, my mom used to make a sort of this beef dish that had what were called specialties, which are handmade noodles. And so in her memory, I'll say that's what it was. Okay. I remember eating that up a lot when I was a kid.
That sounds delicious. Next one is favorite day of the week.
Favorite day of the week. It's going to sound cliche. I like Saturdays now, because Saturdays are the one day where I feel like I can wake up with my kids and I feel no pressures other than just spending time with them.
Right. You got Sunday next and not Monday to jump right back into things.
Right. Right. Awesome. Yeah. There's definitely padding on this on the other end.
Right. For sure. Third question. What is your favorite genre of music?
My favorite genre of music, these days, I guess it would, there seems like there's a thousand new genres of music, by the way, than when I was growing up. But I guess it would be classified as indie rock. So rock that's maybe has a little bit more of a raw edge to it. So my favorite band is Pearl Jam, which was grunge back when I was, but today probably they'd be more of an indie rock band.
Right. Very cool. I love Pearl Jam. Okay. Last this or that is favorite book or article. I'll leave it either way.
So a book that meant the world to me when I needed the messages it delivered was a book by Parker Palmer called Let Your Life Speak. It's a very short, easy read, but deep, and something that I would recommend everyone read. He writes from, it has a religious overtones to it, but you don't have to be religious to really gain the messaging from it. But it's very much about finding that thing that you were meant to do. Listening for the calling of vocation. And I felt like it was a really powerful book. So I'd recommend that. I go back to that one every once in a while.
Nice. I have to, I'll admit, the quick peel around, I sneak that what's your favorite book in there just to really add to my own collection.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. And then, so the last one, this is the fill in the blank. Onions are blank.
Delicious. I add onions to a lot of different things. So, I wouldn't say I just pull out one and eat it on its own, but it's great with a lot of other things. So, and they are, they amplify.
Ooh.
So you add an onion to something, it's going to be better than if it didn't have it. So maybe I'll redo my answer, make it more interesting and say onions are amplifying.
Ooh, I like that. That might be our best answer. So we've had a trend of like the food and they got, you know, they're good on tacos or they're good on this or that or whatever. Yeah. Onions are amplifying.
It took me two tries to get to it though, so don't give me too much credit. But
hey, that's all right. However many tries, you got there. All right. Well, John, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And we love hearing about your background and having you on.
Well, thank you for what you do. And you have an excellent podcast. And I look forward to following it as you continue to talk to great people.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, thanks again. And we'll see you next time.
Okay. Thanks, Taylor.
Stay tuned for the recap of this episode with my sidekick, Melissa Lutz. Are you ready?
bet your bottom dollar.
I am excited to note that we both have microphones this week and headphones.
We do. We're really coming up in the world. Another thing we both have this week is birthdays.
Ba-ba-da-ba. That was one of my first notes, is that at present, at the time of recording this recap, I have already turned 30 and you are still in your 20s. But at the time it's released,
we'll both be much wiser.
That's right. As promised.
Wise.
As promised in our final episode of 2020, we are at least 2 weeks wiser than we were the last time you heard from us.
Yeah. Hey, I have a quick question for you.
Yes.
As you know, a wise old, I shouldn't say old, older 30-year-old, do you have any sage advice for someone who is, you know, going to be entering a new decade in just 2 days?
What a fabulous question. Well, in my 24 hours of being 30, I can share with you that, you know, you just never really know what to expect. But if you search for tiny wins, tiny blooms, if you will, that you are guaranteed to be a happier person. I was going to say more happier. More you are guaranteed happier. To be more happier
and more smarter.
Yep. That's my advice. Look for the tiny win. That's what I did. Cause you know, I mean, obviously the people who had birthdays early on in the pandemic, I never dreamed that in January, this would still be happening. But it is.
Sure is.
And so I wasn't, you know, it's kind of an anticlimactic milestone, but I was overwhelmed yesterday by the love and warmth and celebrations that I still felt despite the fact of where we are in the world.
I love how creative people are getting with their celebrations and ways to show up for their friends when we are social distancing and you know, not allowed to have traditional celebrations.
Mm-hmm.
And I do ask you what your tiny wins have been in the past 24 hours.
I have eaten a lot of cake. That's definitely a win. That's a huge win. I spent some time at one of my favorite stores, Target, and updated my wardrobe to something that is more befitting of a 30-year-old.
Very sophisticated.
Yes. So I bought Velcro shoes and mom jeans. No.
And did you buy a monocle?
Ooh, I should have bought a monocle. Dang. That's a great point. Another tiny win that I had comes at the hands of guest number 13, Dr. Susanna Cook, who asked for my address yesterday and then texted me. Well, I actually had a missed call from her and missed text messages that I didn't see. And she had something delivered. She's like, I didn't even think to check if you were home, but what I sent to you will melt. So are you home? And unfortunately, I was not home, but fortunately, my new roommate was home and she was able to save the day and put whatever it is in a freezer. I actually haven't even looked yet, but I heard.
You don't even know?
I don't even know. I got to check right after this. But I asked Susie if she had sent me an ice sculpture, which is something that I've always wanted. And she said she could not confirm or deny. That's what it was.
I hope it's a tiny, tiny ice sculpture that fits in your freezer.
Wouldn't that be great? That would
be fantastic.
Such a pleasant thing to open up my fridge to every single day.
Okay, well, you have to report back. I'm on the edge of my seat here.
I know.
I can't believe you haven't checked.
I know. I actually forgot about it until you just asked me what my tiny wins were. But perhaps next week I'll share that in the recap, what the melting or not so melty item was. the actual first note that I had on here, and we will get to our recap of John Scherzer in just a moment. But the other thing that I wanted to share before we got into that was that I found out that guest number 11, Kathy Onion, listens. Not only we know she listens to the podcast, but not only does she listen to it, I found out that she listens to it on increased speed. So it sounds like we are chipmunks.
What? Or the Gilmore Girls.
I think she does it so she can soak up all our knowledge and wiseness as quick as possible.
Or the opposite. She just wants to get through it.
Yeah. Or she thinks we spend too much time discussing shenanigans and she wants to get to the guest.
There's no such thing as too much shenanigans, Taylor. Tell Kathy I said so.
Well, she'll hear it.
She might have skipped past it already.
So, knowing this information, I wanted to know, do you think that we should talk really, really fast or really, really slow?
So that she has to listen to it on normal speed so that she can actually... Oh, dang, I can't. My brain doesn't work that fast.
I don't even know what I would say. This is The Blue Planet. I'm Taylor Endian, and we're interviewing John Scherzer.
Okay, I have to tell you that my computer glitched, or like I lost signal while you, right when you started to do it. So you're in super slow-mo. Like, I'm Taylor Onion.
That was my hilarious. That was my other thing. If we talk really slow, then she'll be hearing us at normal speed.
And everyone else will be annoyed.
Yeah, maybe we should get to the recap now.
Okay.
Also, Happy New Year, everyone. This is our first episode of 2021. It's been a tumultuous first few days. But here we are with a new episode of the Bloom Pod, jumping right in.
You know, the first few days weren't super tumultuous. The sixth day was, but I saw something on Instagram. It was a girl who was like, she had one of those little letter boards and it was like, days without incidents. And it was like zero. And she comes by and like flicks it off, it was six. And she flicked it off, put a zero, and then like tossed a bottle of wine back.
I saw something similar that was 2021. We have taken your 7-day trial and we will not be renewing our subscription.
Oh, man. Hey, speaking of subscriptions, and this is going to take us further off topic, but did you know that Netflix raised their prices?
I did not.
Yeah, I got a notification on my TV, and I just, you know, you want to get rid of notifications. And I realized as I was hitting okay, I was confirming a higher monthly price. And I feel like I was duped into confirming that.
That is how they get you.
But Netflix, if you want to sponsor us, we can afford your monthly fees. Yeah.
As a weekly podcast, we would love to share how your higher monthly fee will benefit our listeners.
We'll come up with ideas. We're certain of it.
Yeah.
I can't on the spot right now, but I could do it in due time.
Right. So John Scherzer, that was.
John Scherzer.
Yeah. Our second recommendation by a previous guest of season two. And I was very excited. I was like very, what's the word I'm looking for? Enjoy is what's coming to my mind. So that's what I'm going to say. I really enjoyed the conversation that we had, particularly because it was a new topic that we've not really discussed or had a guest who's kind of in that realm or that space and can share the kind of insights and background that he did. So I was excited about that.
Yeah, this is a cool interview. Definitely insightful.
Mm-hmm. The first note per his interview that I had, obviously the other notes I had in here were all sidebars just for me and you and my mom, was that he mentioned, and I thought this was during the interview, I remember thinking that this was a really kind of interesting point that he made, was that kind of for better or for worse, that Trump from a media perspective he's the one that goes out. And I think, you know, there's a level of accessibility that illustrates or provides, but obviously, and in particular, in the past couple of days, we've seen just how dangerous that can be when there's not, I don't even know that I want to say guidelines, but when it's, you know, this kind of loose cannon and the rhetoric that, you know, sure, it's great that he's coming out, there's not an intermediary, but just how dangerous it can be at the same time as being, you know, maybe a positive for the media because they have direct access, but again, not ideal, obviously, as proven in the last couple of days.
Yeah, I think there's definitely value in being transparent and being candid. with the right person behind right. the keyboard, right? Like, I think as a leader of a country, you're also supposed to have some sort of discernment of what the public needs to know and what they don't. And like, whether or not it's worthy to get people riled up about something. Like, I right. think that's in a lot of ways where, you know, things can get messy and lead to what we saw on the 6th.
Right.
It's like keeping your personal feelings and anger and whatever has been displayed on social media out of it and coming from a more informational, honest, like non-biased. I guess non-biased isn't really the right word, but like putting thought behind what you're putting out to the world as a leader of a major country is important. So I right. think that social media and the access that it gives us to these people is good when used correctly and well.
Right. I think, and to your point, I don't think that he is not putting thought into what he's saying. I think he's got gotten away for quite some time with a certain population of kind of saying something and they're like, oh, well, that's not what he meant, or maybe he didn't mean it this way. And we don't have time for that anymore. Obviously, the Capitol was just attacked by domestic terrorists with little to no pushback from Capitol Police or law enforcement or the National Guard or anything of that nature. And I think entitlement, white supremacy, there are some issues of racism and social justice. All of those things were fully on display on January 6th. And it was disgusting, embarrassing, sad, all the things. And something you just said, about as a leader, you have to know what information is pertinent to the general public and what information is not. And I think of that in terms of parenting, right? If you, let's say the example is, you know, if I'm a small child and I have a scrape or I've cut myself in a way that needs stitches and we have to immediately go to the hospital, I don't want my parent to be like, yeah, you might bleed out. This is the end for you. We don't know. Hopefully we can get to the hospital. I don't know about that, right? I want them to be like, hey, this is a cut and I don't know how to fix it for you, but let's go see somebody who can. Like, there's a difference in delivering information, you know, obviously one way versus the other. And I think to the point of journalism and to the point of fact checking and some of these things that John talked about on the interview, there is a way to deliver it without stoking the fires of people who are already angry, of people who think that there was fraudulent activity, which is a baseless claim, as we have heard over and over and over and over and over again for the past 2 months. So yeah, it just listening back to the episode now, having known what happened on January 6th, 2021, was kind of an interesting and new perspective to be able to listen through.
Yeah, and it was interesting to hear him talk about, too, like the Obama administration and the Biden administration, and how like Obama's was like probably pretty far opposite end of the spectrum from Trump, where they're like a little more closed doors, not quite as candid with everything and every thought that they're having.
Right.
So I will be interested to see how the past 4 years will shape how our president-elect will utilize social media, his transparency in the media, to lead this country, because coming from two very differing presidents, I think it sets the stage for him to make an educated and thoughtful approach to how he addresses the country and the media.
Right. I also think about, you know, obviously at the ripe old age of 30, which when January 6th happened, I was still 29 at that time. So again, that was another experience.
You're just a young gun.
That's right. Still in my 20s at that time. where was I going with this?
Hard to say.
It is hard to say. This is 30. I just totally lost my train of thought there. Oh, I know what I was going to say. The Biden administration, and I think in thinking back about all the different administrations that we've had, right? And that's what I was going to say. As a kid, with in the Clinton era, and then moving into George Bush, and then moving into Obama, I think, you know, with the Obama administration, I like knew what was happening, but I wasn't paying close attention because I was fine in the world, right? And I think now, in the last 4 years, we've seen some very scary and very real, you know, kind of thoughts, intentions, biases, whatever you want to call them, that people have either housed or didn't feel comfortable sharing during the Obama administration, that they felt now comfortable blatantly displaying in the last 4 years. And they felt supported in doing so, right? And so I think it's going to be interesting, just like I'm thinking about, you know, just like the Nixon administration with Watergate, how that impacted the faith, you know, in American, that American people had in the government, just like when 9/11 happened, and George Bush had to, you know, deal with that and come up with a response and do these kinds of things. I think having specifically the last 4 years, which is something I saw somebody said, well, that escalated steadily for 4 years, instead of, you know, of course, the phrase like, well, that escalated quickly.
It did escalate quickly, but over a long period of time.
Right, right.
Whoop, for yeah. 4 years.
Right. And I think that's been the thing, right, is that that there are still some people who were like, I can't believe this. And I just, you know, we didn't anticipate this. And that is, I mean, what a load of phooey, because if you're paying attention at all, everybody anticipated this. This is the exact kind of thing that has been promoted and suggested and whatever for the last 4 years. So to your point, I do think this is going to be one of those monumental experiences for everybody, not just for the administration and how they approach it, but when I'm thinking about, you know, generational characteristics, as we've talked about with a few of our guests, this, that day, January 6th, is going to be a day that, you know, lives on and in infamy, just like Pearl Harbor, just like Watergate, just like 9/11, just like so many of these other things. And it shapes the way that generations talk to each other, talk to, you know, across the board. Do you have thoughts? I feel like I've been rambling for a while now.
I had a lot of thoughts collect as we were talking. And one thing that I think I wanted to point out too is like, I hope that what as sad and disgusting as the 6th events were, I'm hoping that those people that were in denial, that like found it easy to turn a blind eye to the things that they didn't believe in the Trump administration and focus on the ways that they personally benefited from what they believed was happening in this administration. Like, I'm hoping that maybe this at the very least for that group of people that voted the way that they did, voted for Trump, maybe this will wake them up to see that like, okay, we can't just focus on how we believe we can personally benefit mm-hmm. from a president. We have to look at the bigger picture and how the whole of our country can benefit. And I think that's where President Biden has been given a really, really hard job following the Trump administration, because it has been such a divisive 4 years and like so polarizing in our country. Like, we right. are more divided than ever. And it's a president's job to unify people. So stepping into this role now, I think that Obama did a great job of that, and multiple other presidents have. But now there's like a lot of reparation that has to be done, and undoing what was done and shifting people's mindsets and beliefs, not belief systems, but like outlook and values is no small task.
Right.
But I think that like, if anyone can do it and unify a country, I believe that that is the intention of our president and vice president elect. And I'm excited to see what they do when they step into the role.
Yeah. Very hopeful has been the thing that, you know, is coming to mind since I think it was it wasn't on election day, but a few days after, I want to say the 7th or 8th of November, when we had the unofficial kind of certification or unofficial results. Obviously, the certification is what led to the madness of this past week. But yeah, I'm with you. I'm hopeful for the future, cautiously optimistic, I'll say, for hopefully what is coming. And I agree with you. I still think there are going to be people who, you know, think that it was a planted siege, or that it wasn't really, you know, couldn't possibly be real American, you know, citizens who are like me and you. This is, you know, people who are on the far right. And I think there was probably a mixture of folks who were out there who had intentions of, hey, I want to go out and maybe observe what's happening. Hey, I want to go out and protest, because I do believe that there was, you know, we're not being given all the information. But yeah, I'm hopefully those events, if there's any kind of silver lining that we can look at, which is hard to even imagine, hopefully it is that more people will realize what has been happening and what so many of us have been concerned about since 2016.
Yes.
Agreed. Really 2015, I guess, is when the election would have taken place, but, or was it 20?
What?
I guess it would have been 2016, then 2017. Yeah. Anyway, I'm just doing math in my head. Don't mind me.
Oh, okay. You do your thing. I'll be here. But something else you said in your little mini rant that I truly enjoyed was that, Brittany, you, or maybe that was the part you were going to cut. I don't know. But at some point you said something about not realizing that when you turned 30, we'd still be in a pandemic. This is maybe way backtracking, but it just made me laugh thinking about last March, and they're like, 2-week quarantine. And we're like, 2 weeks? Right. We can do that. Right. It's no big deal. It's right. A long time to be at home, but like, I think we can do it.
Right.
And yeah. Now,
I know.
10 months later.
Yeah. I've been thinking, because we're coming up on, I mean, we're literally like 2 months out of the year mark of when the world shut down. And I do think about that, because it was, I think it was Friday, March 13th was my last day normally in the office. And it was like, yeah, we'll be back April 5th, but you know, there's probably going to be some different regulations and whatever. And then it was, oh, maybe we can come back in June. Oh, maybe July. Oh, maybe we'll come back when the semester starts again. And it just has been this
maybe
constant,
2022.
Right. Like this, I think it was Brené Brown, or maybe she was quoting someone. She said this kind of slow unraveling, which is exactly like, we get it in our heads, like, oh, we'll make it through these 2 weeks and then we'll be fine. Oh, we'll make it through the summer and then we'll be fine. Oh, we'll make it through the cold, you know, typical cold and flu season, and then we'll be fine. And here we are in January of 2021.
I don't know that it was intentional to do it that way, but I think if anyone were to have known how long this would have taken, I think that was a smart way to do it. Because like, if they told us we're quarantining for a year, people would have panicked. But like, when you give it to us in tiny little bite-sized chunks, we're like, okay, 2 weeks. Okay, one more month. We've already done 2 weeks. We can do another month. Actually, kind of brilliant.
The interesting thing in all of that is that if the bulk of Americans would follow rules and mandates and social distance, etc., like, we probably could be out of the worst of it by now. But I am hopeful that a new administration will help, the vaccine rollout will help. I'm, again, cautiously optimistic that maybe by the end of 2021, we'll be able to, I don't even know, go to a concert again. Will I ever feel safe at a live show outdoors? Outdoors, probably. It's just craziness.
It's weird watching movies too and being like, put your mask on.
I know. I feel like I find myself oftentimes watching a show or a movie and being like, oh, you have no idea what happens in 2020.
So much freedom that you're taking for granted.
Right. You poor oblivious fools. Oh, man. The next note I had is an abrupt change from the discussions that we've just been having. But when we were talking about blooming experiences, I thought that John shared a lot of interesting things, two of which were that having children really kind of turned things upside down for him, which given the given my friends and family members who have had children, I'm like, that's something that I would anticipate. It's like you think you know what you're doing and then you watch them, or they think they know what they're doing and you watch them have kids, and then it's like, oh, nobody really knows what they're doing.
We're all just
trying to you know, be adults and function in the world. But the other thing,
so
that,
true. Wait, I wanted to tell you a story on that.
Oh,
real
yeah,
quick,
sure, go ahead.
The reality of turning 30 and, you know, being nowhere near having kids, and I'm fine with that. Like, I'm on no personal timeline, but I had this weird realization the other day. My boss was in, and he brought his baby, who's the cutest little guy ever, and he had to take a call, and he's like, will you watch him really quick? So I was just standing with his stroller, and one of the employees of the food hall that I work at, she had gone away to college and she was back in town, and she was sitting at a table, and I hadn't seen her in probably a few months. I don't know, but she saw me with the baby and she's like, Melissa. And I think my heart dropped into my stomach, because I was like, had this brief glimpse of like, this could be my reality. I'm almost 30. And like, it's not that far fetched that I would just be strolling a baby around. And I like started to panic. I was like, I'm not ready for that. I'm just trying to survive on my own, much less a very fragile human life.
This is the perfect interjection for the other piece that I was going to say, because he was talking about being like in a car, like having time to yourself to just reflect and think about whether it's creative time that you need, whether it's time to think about events that are happening in your life and really take a deeper dive and reflect on them. But what you just said, maybe in a very brief instance in your head, it's like, oh, this could be me, but it's not me, but I'm not ready for this. Right. All those things. But to his point, I do think that pre-pandemic, that is not a luxury that many of us were afforded, took advantage of, however you want to put it. But I think self-reflection and the act of actively self-reflecting and taking time to think about, okay, what am I doing in the world? How are my behaviors, my communication style, all these pieces, how are they contributing to, or how are they affecting even, like, what's the impact that I'm having? What's the intent? What do I want to, you know, have the, what is my intent, and how am I being intentional with my impact? Those are the words that I was trying to put together.
You summarized it nicely.
Thank you.
Job well done.
It must be because I'm 30.
Yes. And I, so for me, it's in my car and hiking. And I think that's part of why I love hiking so much. And I love hiking alone. And I don't bring headphones. I don't listen to anything. It's just like me alone with my thoughts in nature. And sometimes it's like just a peaceful, like, no thought time. And then sometimes I'm like, this is when I have my best ideas. This is how I can impact people. This is how I can be a better manager. This is how I can increase my energy levels and start my day right. But I think it's so important to carve that time out for ourselves. And I am finding that it's just been such a busy season for me, like the past few months, that I'm like working nonstop. And I'm looking back and I'm like, I don't know what happened the last few months. I haven't had my like little nature therapy days. I would go every week and hike. And like, that was my time to truly digest everything that had happened and reflect on things and how I could improve moving forward. And I like, it's so important. I've recently been realizing that I'm like, I need to get out, and I need like my nature meditation.
Mm-hmm. Self-care cannot wait.
Mm-hmm. What's your road trip? Where do you do your best thinking?
Oh, I was like, I love road trips.
I'm sorry.
I was about to take us in a completely different direction.
We can talk about that too.
Yeah. Honestly, I do think that driving and having time from a commute perspective, obviously going back and forth to work, there's some pieces there. in different stages of my life when I lived in different areas. Like when I was in college, it was 2.5 hours between home and Champaign. And when I was in Memphis, it was a 7-hour drive to get back to my family. And so having those kind of spaces to sit and think and decompress and listen to music and whatever it may be, I feel like it's shifted from some music to some podcasts. And now in my older age, I have begun also to listen to NPR tidbits to collect some music for myself.
I listen to NPR all the time. It's great.
Yeah. I really like the ladies. It's live from NPR News. I'm Corva Coleman.
Corva Coleman. What a gal. Do you ever listen to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me?
No.
Oh, Taylor, you're missing out.
Okay.
It's so funny. It's this like game show on like recent news. And it's based in Chicago.
Wow.
It is so funny. I don't know how else to put it into words, but they have like celebrities and well-known people call in and play games, and they'll just like take callers from all over the country. Wow. And the news that they report on is like ridiculous. It's so funny.
Delightful.
And they have like you should. They have a panel of judges that I think have backgrounds as comedians because they are so funny.
That's awesome. And then the last thing, I mean, now in quarantine, it's been walks. Obviously, there's not much hiking in Tampa, Florida, but there are beautiful neighborhoods, and I like to walk through. And whether if I'm listening to music or a podcast or NPR or whatever it might be, I think there's still that space. Honestly, that's how part of my interest in starting a podcast came from. Even before the pandemic started, but going on these walks, listening to a podcast, and then hearing either somebody being interviewed or the interviewer asked, like kind of asking these prodding questions, I think has allowed me to just think and gather resources and information that are relevant to my life and my job that are outside of kind of the norm. And I think a lot of times with something like leadership development, we go straight to a leadership guru or like a leadership podcast or whatever it might be. But for me, so many of the lessons that I have learned and like to apply have come from kind of these abstract places, whether it's music or knowing the history of a band or listening to a podcast or hearing a guest that might be an actress or a scientist or whatever share their insights and background, I think has been powerful. And I hope that's what we're attempting to do with the Bloom Pod, but maybe
if you're listening to us at normal speed, at least.
This is true.
Just kidding, Kath. I love you.
Exactly. Well, that was you know what? Actually, that's not true. I was going to say that was the last note that I have, but the last thing that I had written down was that onions are amplifying. And I think that has been my favorite onions are to date.
I have two notes on that. One, I think you should just stick with the quick peel. People like the quick peel. I will concede. I'll just slap chop my onions quietly at home without talking about it on this podcast. Okay. Number two, that question makes every single person so nervous.
I know.
It's like wait, I'm on the Bloom Pod, onion. I have to have a good answer. I know. And I think they all start that way, like a little panic. And then they think it through and then they come up with cool answers like amplifying. And nice. I love that.
So great.
It cracks me up every time to hear them like, good. No, that's not good enough.
It has definitely been a tiny joy of season two to hear the answers and to hear people either go from, I mean, yeah, they go with everything, or to be like, onions are amazing. It's been fun.
What if someone who hates onions was asked that question and they just, I would panic. If I hated onions, I'd be like, it's a great last name, but as a vegetable, I'm not partial to them.
Right. Onions are... that'll be the day I'll wait for someone to say that onions are terrible, and I will be sad, but I will allow it.
Yeah. Onion, not the people though.
Yeah. Just the vegetable.
Yeah. Wait, I have one note before we finish about, it was way back in the beginning of the interview, about his approach when he goes into new jobs as a consultant, about curiosity. Mm-hmm. And I really like that. His advice was be curious, ask questions, and listen. And I think as people, and I say as people, I'm talking from my perspective, because I'm maybe the most guilty of it, is I love to relate to people and I like to display that I understand what they're saying. But sometimes I'm pointing at myself, do it in a way that takes away from what they're saying. Like, oh yeah, one time I also had an experience like that, and let me tell you about that. And it sidetracks the conversation. And something I'm really working on, I'm not good at all yet. I don't know that I've made any progress, but just stopping and listening, waiting till they're done. And I think for me, part of it is my short attention span. And if I don't say it in the moment, it's gone forever. But that's okay, because that conversation is not about my thoughts and my feedback. And I think that's what I have to remind myself, right? Like, sometimes it is worth more to listen to what other people have to say than to show them that you understand and can relate. Because mm-hmm. if we're focusing so much on what we have to say, we're missing what they're saying.
Yeah. Listening to react versus, oh no, sorry, listening to understand versus listening to reply is a major difference. So if we're having a conversation mm-hmm. and I'm listening to you, I'm hearing you, then I'm listening to understand your perspective or the story that you're telling. But if I'm listening to respond, then I'm literally waiting for you to stop talking so that I can share a similar experience that I've had or something that I think, you know, is whether or not I think it's more important, but you know, I'm literally listening to be able to reply to you. And I think it's such an important key to effective communication.
Yeah. And I think part of it is like, there's two parts to people who listen to reply. I think one is ego and one is love. Like mm-hmm. we want people to feel understood part of the time. And part of the time we want to feel understood and we want to feel like relevant in the conversation. And I think being aware of your intentions of why you want to cut someone off and or listen to reply will shift how we approach conversations. Wow, I'm talking to myself right now. I'm listening to Melissa. Good sage advice.
Are we witnessing live the art of self-reflection?
Yes, I'm having an epiphany.
That's good stuff. All right, buddy, that's all I got.
Well, the note I had here was the very last note, but it was meant to be the first one. And it said, start by singing happy birthday to Taylor ridiculously. And now that we're at the end, is it an appropriate time?
I would
happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, old lady. Happy birthday to you.
Please know that when the next episode comes around, or should I just do it now? I can't think of a weird way to sing it to you.
That's okay. We don't have to.
Because you're not officially 30 yet. So that's what I was saying.
It feels like it'd be a lie.
It would be a lie. But by the time the episode comes out, you will be. But by the time we do the next recap, you also will be. So expect a returned favor.
You know what? I look forward to it. I can't wait to see what you conjure up in the next week.
I'm curious as well, I must admit.
That mine was kind of just on the fly there. And I think if I'd been given a week to think through that, I could have done something real razzle-dazzle-y, but that'll just have to do.
I wasn't sure if you were going to fully commit, but you did. And I'm proud of you. And I'm very happy about what just happened.
Thank you. I'm honored to be able to sing to you on this day of your birth, plus one.
Plus one. All right, buddy. You ready to sign us off?
I mean, yeah. I'm just having so much fun.
I know. Per usual.
All right. But I guess we should get on with our days and let these fine people do the same.
I suppose we should.
All right. Well, that's the way the onion peels.
Thanks for joining us. We look forward to seeing you again next week with another fabulous guest back on January 19th for the second episode of 2021. Don't forget, in the meantime, check us out on Instagram, Twitter. Go ahead and like, rate, review, follow, all the things, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Anchor. And we'll see you next week.